This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday night, June 25th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And by the way, once again, thank you for your end-of-fiscal year support of KUAF. We reached our goal of $35,000 already, which in turn qualified us to unlock the additional $19,000 challenge made by KUAF donors. We are ending the financial calendar strong, thanks to your support. Ahead on tonight's Ozarks, Leah Uribe brings us a lullaby edition of Sound Perimeter. From Brahms to Amos Cochran, music designed to calm us across the centuries. That's in tonight's second half hour. On tomorrow's morning edition on 91.3, during his confirmation hearing, Attorney General William Barr promised independence, saying he thinks he is in a position in his life where he can do the right thing and not really care about the consequences. Critics say he's been doing the bidding of the president. DOJ whistleblowers say political pressure is influencing his decisions. How does he respond? An interview with the Attorney General tomorrow morning on Morning Edition. You can listen to Morning Edition from 5 to 9 tomorrow on 91.3 KUAF. Arkansas is reporting almost another 700 new cases of COVID-19. At today's press briefing in Little Rock, Governor Asa Hutchinson announced 687 new cases. That brings the cumulative total to just more than 18,000. There were two more deaths from the virus during the most recent monitoring period, bringing that total in Arkansas to 242. Washington and Benton counties again had the most new cases in the state, 96 and 45 respectively. There were 26 new cases in Sebastian County. The governor began his briefing today with a note from a nurse at Washington Regional Medical Center in Fayetteville.
To the people who think COVID isn't real or isn't serious, I just want to let you know it is very real and very serious. I spent the day comforting my dying patient so they would know they weren't alone. This patient who was perfectly fine 6 days ago, this patient who didn't have underlying conditions, this patient who is now not perfectly fine, COVID doesn't care about your age, your gender, where you're from, or what ethnicity you are. If you have lived a good, healthy life, or if you haven't, it doesn't matter. It can't affect anyone. So be safe and be mindful. Wear your mask. If not for yourself, do it for others.
There are nearly 5,700 active cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas, including 841 in correctional facilities and more than 4,700 cases that are considered community cases. Arkansas is not the only state that has experienced a rise in new cases since the 1st of June. At least one other, Texas, is slowing plans for further reopenings. Governor Hutchinson today, in response to a question about Texas, says that state had already opened up more than Arkansas.
They are at, I believe it's 75% capacity in their restaurants. We're at 2/3. And Governor Abbott, based upon your question, did not say they're rolling it back. They're saying they're putting on new openings on pause. Well, our new openings are on pause as well. We're on pause at 2/3. And we're on pause until we feel comfortable that we ought to lift additional restrictions. And so, again, you have to look beyond just simply what phase they articulate that they're in, because every state, most of the states actually have jumped way out from the White House guidelines on phases and have moved into their own phases. Like, I think California has 3 or 4 phases, and I think they're in phase 3, and they're not following the White House guidelines. They're setting their own template for it. And so Texas, it seems to be somewhat similar.
Many questions today for the governor were devoted to masks and whether or not there should be some sort of stricter rule about masks, one stricter than the governor, who every day strongly urges Arkansans to wear them to protect others and themselves. The governor says he remains steadfast that a statewide directive or law requiring masks, such as a recent ordinance passed by the Fayetteville City Council or possibly an upcoming directive from City Hall in Little Rock, is not the path to follow.
We've worked with the cities. If they talk to us about it, there's ways that they can be helpful without violating our statewide order. For example, one city council, they're passing resolutions just simply advocating for everybody to wear masks without making it a civil penalty. So I haven't seen what Little Rock intends to do, but we've made clear we have a statewide guidance that's in place, and we're encouraging people to wear masks and the businesses to participate in that.
The governor says an effort by the Springdale Chamber of Commerce to provide signage to businesses requiring masks is an example of how businesses, patrons, and cities can work together to make sure more people do wear face coverings.
A program that they have about encouraging businesses to advocate and to wear masks and to encourage their patrons to do it as well. It is Protect and Respect, Wear a Mask by the Springdale Chamber of Commerce, encouraging their businesses. So this would be a sign that you could have in the business that says masks are mandatory for entry to this business, encouraging their businesses to advocate for wearing a mask.
Dr. Nate Smith, Arkansas's Secretary of Health, says there will be increased testing in Washington County over the next 2 weeks and that the state conducted more than 6,600 tests statewide yesterday. The briefings can be seen in their entirety at the governor's YouTube channel, and we keep you up to date with how the virus is affecting Arkansas and our region at the COVID-19 update page at KUAF.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Caregivers for loved ones have a challenging job, taking care of somebody while often also working, raising children, or tending to other life responsibilities. For many caregivers, the pandemic, with its lockdowns, its concern about the spread of COVID-19 and other hardships, has made the role even more difficult. Randy Schneider, Director of Aging Services and Administration at the Schmieding Center for Senior Health and Education in Springdale, has been on our program before to talk about the challenges of caregiving. She says now, in 2020, the challenges can be intensified.
We're hearing from a lot of caregivers who maybe worked full-time or even part-time, and now they're staying at home full-time or working from home. And so that just changes that whole caregiving dynamic. When you're used to being out some and now you're home full-time with the person that you're taking care of, that can be a little bit different in terms of just anxiety and just the sort of all-day, everyday caregiving that was different before. You know, caregivers who were able to leave the house, maybe leave their loved one for a short amount of time, are now finding that they have to stay at home or they're not comfortable going out and about, so they're not getting those breaks that they were used to, or people not having extra help coming into the home. So that, again, changes that dynamic. That means the family caregiver is the person who is doing all of those caregiving responsibilities without really being able to take a break or hand that off to someone else. Even long-distance caregiving looks a little bit different. You know, it may have been an adult child who's used to coming to see mom and dad every few weeks, and now they just don't feel comfortable traveling or don't feel comfortable coming in to see their parents because they don't want to bring anything into them. So the role of the caregiver, that dynamic, has shifted through all of this.
Well, I imagine likewise it has shifted for the people that are being cared for, too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's difficult for any of us to feel like we've been sort of kept inside or we have to change our normal routine, you know, especially for people who are care recipients. They're at home. That daily routine can be so important for so many of them. And now that daily routine has shifted in what that looks like. And so, you know, that's hard for them too. And it's not easy if they're not used to being around their caregiver 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's difficult for any of us to have that shift when we're not used to being around somebody all of the time.
And I imagine among the concerns, of course, for caregivers is you just don't want to be an agent that spreads this virus.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's hard to be a caregiver in the best of circumstances. You're constantly looking out for the person you're taking care of and their health, but also, you know, I have to keep myself healthy so I can take care of this person that I love. You know, what happens if something happens to me? And that has become even more prominent with COVID-19. You know, I have to be responsible for keeping the person I love safe, but I also have to be extra careful keeping myself safe and healthy so that I'm not taking something into them, or if something does happen to me and I get sick, now what do I do? What emergency plans do I have in place?
Are there other things that perhaps some of us aren't thinking about that caregivers have to be more concerned about over the last few months? I mean, getting sleep, things like that?
Yeah, well, I think getting sleep and also, you know, a lot of what we're hearing from caregivers is, you know, okay, I get the physical safety and the physical concerns of this. I know that we have to be safe and healthy and wash our hands and do all these things to not get this virus, but what about our mental and emotional health? You know, how do we maintain a strong mental health if we, you know, cannot get out and do the things that we used to do? If I'm not getting a break, how do we maintain that mental health for both of us? So I think there's really a fine balance for caregivers between how do we stay physically healthy, but then also how do we stay mentally and emotionally healthy? And of course, that's true for any of us right now, but especially for caregivers, they have a tendency to be less mentally and physically healthy anyway, just because of the caregiver stress that they're under. And so now this has added an extra layer to that.
Well, I know that you and I have talked in the past about things that caregivers can do to make sure that they stay healthy and that things can be as safe as possible. Are there tips you can offer now for caregivers in during a pandemic?
So I think, you know, caregivers who have heard me say this before are probably not going to hear anything new, but I cannot stress enough the importance of taking care of yourself. You know, making sure that you are putting yourself first, and I know that seems counterintuitive to all caregivers, and that's very easy for me to say and very difficult to put into place. But, you know, just doing things like taking 10 minutes for yourself every day where you can do something that is that you enjoy. So is that, you know, if that's journaling or reading one chapter in a book or just taking a walk around the block, around your neighborhood, you know, and if you can and you want to include the person that you're taking care of in some of those outdoor activities, that's a perfectly legitimate thing to do as well, but make sure that you're taking care of yourself, eating a healthy diet, exercising, maintaining as much of a daily routine as you possibly can, and of course, getting a good night's sleep as well.
You know, and you mentioned that it seems counterintuitive to put yourself first if you're a caregiver. It makes me think of those instructions you hear on a plane, right? The oxygen mask, God forbid that has to happen, comes down. You put on yourself before your child so you can help them.
Exactly. And we often use that analogy when we talk to caregivers. You have to put your own oxygen on first before you can help someone else.
What about, I'm sure there are some caregivers who, for whatever circumstance, are not able to be in a house 24/7. Perhaps they just have to go out and run errands, or perhaps there's still some manner of their work that they have to do outside. What do you say to those caregivers?
Yeah, so, you know, practice the safety measures that we all have to put in, that we're all putting into place right now. So wearing your mask, you know, limiting your exposure as much as possible, you know, making sure that you're doing good hand hygiene, and then just monitoring symptoms of your loved one at home. And if you can't leave your loved one at home alone, you know, a lot of the caregiver agencies in town are just doing an incredible job of keeping caregivers going into the homes, making sure that their caregivers are screening themselves and are healthy before they go into your home. So, you know, there is some help available if you feel comfortable doing that. You know, if not, find somebody, a family member or someone that you trust, to go into the home and help you take care of that person so that you can get out and do the things that you have to do as well.
What about conversations with someone you're taking care of who might not fully understand or comprehend the situation that the world is in right now?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's especially true if you're a caregiver of someone with dementia. You know, even in the earlier stages of dementia, sometimes the information just isn't completely getting through to that person. They're just not able to process all of that information. And so, you know, if you're taking care of someone who can handle the information and they want to know what's happening, then that's perfectly okay to give them the information about COVID-19. Here's why we can't go out and do things. You know, here's why we're not going to church on Sunday. Here's why we can't go and play bridge with our group of friends. But especially for people with dementia, you know, they may not understand the physical distancing, may not understand why you can't go and do the things that you were doing before. So it's okay to go ahead and use those therapeutic fibbing techniques and validation techniques that we talk about to caregivers of people with dementia, they don't have to know all of the information because it's going to be too much for them to understand. So, you know, it's okay to use limited information. We're not going to church today, but let's go drive through for ice cream instead, you know, using some of that therapeutic fibbing, some of those distraction techniques, because it's a lot of information for any of us to process. So for someone with dementia, that's just probably way too much for them to be able to take in and understand. And we know it gets frustrating with caregivers because they don't, you know, I've told my husband 4 times that we can't go out today, but he keeps asking over and over again. And we know that gets really frustrating. So that's why, you know, it's okay to use those distraction techniques and not give all of that information.
And I know this is a little bit outside of what we're talking about, but I think about professional caregivers in long-term facilities who might be having conversations with residents there about why your loved ones haven't been able to come inside for 3 months and visit you. And that's got to be tough, too.
Yeah, it is. It's hard on the staff. It's hard on the families. It's hard on the person in the facility to understand why I haven't been able to see my daughter or why I can't see my husband. The facilities in our area locally, really, I have been so impressed with how much they have done to try to connect family members and how much extra time they're taking with the residents to be sure that they're getting some extra activities and doing some things to help maintain that mental and emotional health as well. They've done a fantastic job in our area doing that.
I imagine more people are okay with things like FaceTime and Zoom than they might have been 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah, isn't it amazing how much we have learned in just a few short months, things that we never thought we would be doing. But certainly FaceTime and Zoom, you know, all of those things are great tools to be able to connect with people. And I know we hear people say this, even though we're physical distancing, we don't want a social distance. So make sure you stay socially connected to people, and doing virtual connection is a great way for people to reach out to caregivers. If you know a caregiver and you haven't been able to walk across the street and talk to them, you know, at least reach out to them by phone or ask if you can FaceTime them, because sometimes it's just those caregivers just need to know that somebody's out there thinking about them. You know, it can be very isolating. So reaching out through FaceTime or Zoom is a great option.
What about the last 100 days for you, Brandy? Has it been different? Has anything surprised you about you professionally over the last 3 months?
You know, I think it has been, it's been harder for me than I thought it would be. You know, we are working some from home and some from the office, so that is definitely an adjustment to be going back and forth. But I think I was surprised at how much the need has changed. So while caregivers have always needed support, needed some education, it has seemed to be a lot more intense over the past couple of months, and just what that looks like for them. And so I've been surprised at how emotional that has been for me as well, to support the caregivers through all of that.
We've talked about tips how to take care of yourself. Is there a resource, or are there resources that caregivers can find online to give them some more help or some more support?
Yeah. So if they go to the Family Caregiver Alliance website, which is caregiver.org, they provide a lot of useful information, helpful hints and tips, as well as ALZ.org, which is the Alzheimer's Association website. And then we are, at this meeting center, we are still doing phone meetings as well as Zoom meetings. So caregivers are welcome to reach out to us, and we can do individualized meetings. But we also are still doing support groups via Zoom, so we're happy to hook them up with those support groups as well.
And would their first step to go schmiedingcenter.org? Would that be the first way to go?
Schmiedingcenter.org, schmiedingcenter.org, or they can call 479-751-3043. And there is always someone in the office to answer the phone.
Randy, thank you. It's always great to talk to you. I hope you're practicing self-care as well, and you're welcome back on the program anytime.
Well, thank you, Kyle, for having me, and I hope you are also doing this thing.
As much as we can, right? Thank you.
Right, exactly.
Randy Schneider is Director of Aging Services and Administration at the Schmieding Center for Senior Health and Education in Springdale. Our conversation is a continuation of a series of discussions about health, aging, and wellness on Ozarks at Large, in conjunction with the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. You can find out more about the Schmieding Center at schmiedingcenter.org.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks is open each Friday through Tuesday with new safety procedures in place. Members and guests are welcome to explore 6 acres of outdoor cultivated gardens, hours of operation, membership perks, and more available online at bgozarks.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Just more than 100 years ago, hundreds of African Americans were killed in Phillips County, Arkansas, by a mob of white vigilantes and federal troops. We've discussed the 1919 Elaine massacre on our show before. It's one of the deadliest sprees of murder of African Americans in the country's history. A new book, Damaged Heritage, The Elaine Race Massacre and a Story of Reconciliation, is written by native Arkansan J. Chester Johnson. The book is, among other things, an account of the massacre and of the legal changes that developed because of the work of attorney Scipio Africanus Jones, who defended African Americans after the incident. But the book is also about the long history of racism in this country that extends into the present day. The author discovered his beloved grandfather was a member of the Ku Klux Klan in Arkansas and likely a participant in the massacre. We talk with J. Chester Johnson yesterday, and next week we'll hear much of that conversation on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large. But we wanted to share a bit of our discussion today as J. Chester Johnson considered the danger of ignoring, dismissing, or downplaying the history of racism in the United States.
I actually believe people will say, well, you know, these things happened in the past, and it was of the time, and treating African Americans this way, it was conventional, it was habitual. And my book, I say that damaged heritage, or the way in which African Americans were treated in the past, was recognized by and folks knew that what they were doing, white folks knew that it was evil and sinful and it was wrong. But there was this counterbalancing, this countervailing element that they were living with, which is this excessive veneration of the past, of ancestors, of tradition. And Webster puts a 50-cent word on it called filial pietism, and I adopted that concept. And there has been, and filial pietism, while we feel, and you refer to shame and guilt, and that's part of the damaged heritage that we, and that is certainly in my situation, that came along with actually my existence. And while we knew that what we were doing, and I, collectively, we whites knew what we were doing, the greater force in our lives ended up being our allegiance through this filial pietism to the past, to whether, you know, how our grandparents lived, how our parents lived. And it was also, quite frankly, economically, you know, having the ability to have free or cheap labor, combined with the ability to enjoy white supremacy, were all of these factors were what drove the continuation of racism from generation to generation. I mean, we're talking about 400 years here. So there had to be something that created this cycle of that we're living through today, which is, in all of what I've talked about, has been a way in which black lives have been cheapened. Mm-hmm. And people could end up not only harming blacks, but killing blacks with impunity. I mean, that's one of the things I discuss about the Elaine race massacre. You had all these African Americans dying, Now, there were five whites who killed. Who were killed. I think two of them were by friendly fire. But, you know, within a matter of the massacre occurred over like four or five days.
Right.
At the end, they were impounding blacks. They impounded 300 African Americans in Phillips County. They cut it back to 122 that they arrested. Then 74 were found guilty of crimes from first degree murder to night riding. There wasn't it was unheard of that whites would be arrested. Of course they weren't arrested. And this is the cheapness. This is sort of the history of the cheapness that we've applied to African American lives. And how did that happen? And I still think that the role of filial pietism camouflaged, inoculated, it still does. And the terrible existence of our damaged heritage that we keep applying from generation to generation. And one of the reasons that, you know, people will ask me, well, why did you focus? In fact, even some of my closest friends, I've heard them say, I mean, closest friends in Arkansas say, why can't Chester leave it alone? Why can't he leave Elaine alone? My own view is that if we don't deal with these issues, filial pietism, damaged heritage, etc., in our generation, all we're doing is forcing it forward. And when we forced it forward, it is the cycle that we inherit of racism. And so we have to be very, very careful in our own lives now. What do we adopt as individuals that effectively transfer elements of racism forward for the next generation? And I think the only way we break it is by dealing with it. I didn't participate in the massacre, clearly. I don't have guilt about that, but it is something, the heritage I have, it is part of who I am, and it is something I have to deal with. And if I don't deal with it, then all I'm doing is creating the continuity that we've all lived with over 400 years.
J. Chester Johnson is the author of Damaged Heritage, The Elaine Race Massacre and a Story of Reconciliation, that is available now. We'll hear much more from our conversation, recorded yesterday, on an upcoming edition of Ozarks at Large. J. Chester Johnson is a native Arkansan. He now lives in Manhattan. A reminder that the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks is teaming up with the Arkansas Department of Health for a drive-through COVID-19 test for Arkansas veterans, their caregivers, and families Saturday at the VA campus. The test will be administered from 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. in the parking garage. There is no fee.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Tomorrow, the Benton County Health Unit, part of the Arkansas Department of Health, will host a free drive-through COVID-19 testing event. And today we're speaking with Loy Bailey, administrator with Benton County Health Unit. Loy, nice to talk to you.
Well, nice talking to you, Peter. We provide a multitude of services here at the local health unit, anything from women's health to immunizations to environmental health services, which includes restaurant inspections, on-site sewage disposal inspection program, which is very large in this part of the state due to the growth and whatnot. So we really a variety of things under that umbrella of public health.
Y'all are hosting a drive-through COVID-19 testing event. Now, of course, if you're a listener, you should know Washington and Benton counties have kind of been the hot spot in the state for maybe a couple of weeks even. So these things are probably needed in this area. If you could describe what's going to be taking place.
We have been really fortunate, continue to be fortunate up in this area with so many excellent community partners. In this case, we've partnered with Northwest Arkansas Community College, the campus particularly at Number One College Drive in Bentonville, to host a drive-through COVID-19 testing event that'll be free.
This is taking place in the Shoemaker, the parking lot of the Shoemaker Center for Global Business Development there at NWACC in Bentonville. Now, it's drive-through. People don't even get out of their car, do they? In fact, they administer this test themselves, don't they?
Our nursing staff that'll be available on-site, they will be assisting individuals that are driving through in the actual, you know, process of collecting the sample. It's relatively easy. If there are any issues, then we can do the test. But typically, what we find is that virtually everyone, it's very simple, and everyone's able to do that. Themselves, we have very little issues with that. People ought to be patient. We expect a large turnout, so we'll be processing obviously as quickly and efficiently as possible. But it does may take some time.
Patients can will probably be informed within 3 to 5 days if they're negative or positive. And to me, I don't know why. Maybe because all of this just seems so much bigger than anything I've ever experienced. To me, that's like a pretty quick turnaround.
That is quick. And now there can be some extensions to that time frame. It kind of depends on the volume of tests that are being received in the lab. So obviously, the more received, it may take a little bit longer. But that's usually a what I would regard as a ballpark figure of getting results back. There's some really, really great resources for information. In particular, I would say that the healthy.arkansas.gov website is an excellent resource. Going to that website, you'll see the very top in a background in red, there's a COVID-19. And when a person accesses that, there's just a tremendous amount of information. It also provides the daily briefings that the governor and Dr. Smith provide. That's a great resource. The underlying message to all of this would be for everyone to make sure that we're practicing the physical distancing, you know, wearing the mask, washing your hands often, all of those messages that we've been consistently sending out. I think we need to continually make sure that we're personally and as a family and community observing all of those directives. That would be the essential message that I would share.
Loy Bailey with the Benton County Health Unit, thanks so much for talking to us, and I hope it's a successful event.
I have no doubt it will go great, and it'll be a great service to the community, and so we're looking forward to it.
And again, the best place to find information online, that's healthy.arkansas.gov. It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. Local matters.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Oklahoma State Department of Health reports 438 new confirmed cases of COVID-19. During their most recent 24-hour monitoring period, there were no additional deaths in Oklahoma from the virus. There have now been almost 12,000 cumulative cases and 375 deaths from the virus in Oklahoma. You can find detailed statistics for the state at coronavirus.health.ok.gov. The state of Oklahoma generally releases its most recent numbers around 11 o'clock each morning. An Arizona-based adoption attorney licensed to practice in Arkansas pled guilty yesterday to the offense of conspiring to smuggle pregnant women from the Republic of the Marshall Islands to broker adoptions for illegal financial gain. In a press release, acting U.S. attorney for the Western District of Arkansas, David Clay Foulkes, wrote his office, in collaboration with the FBI and the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service, had been investigating Paul Peterson of Mesa, Arizona, for several years. A female Marshallese national is cited as a co-conspirator in the case. According to court documents, Peterson arranged multiple adoptions of Marshallese infants by U.S. families, offering pregnant Marshallese women $10,000 to illegally travel to the U.S. to deliver their babies and place them up for adoption in Arkansas. Fowkes is quoted in the release as saying the case will send a strong message to those who seek to profit off vulnerable individuals, referring both to impoverished RMI birth mothers and American adoptive families. Judge Timothy Brooks accepted the plea in the U.S. District Court in Fayetteville. Peterson faces a maximum sentence of up to 10 years in prison and a fine of up to $250,000. A sentence will be determined at a later date.
Borrowing and spending are good for the economy, right?
The rise in debt, the rise in credit, is very closely linked to the rise in income inequality and wealth inequality.
How the financial system imposes risk on those who can least afford it. Debt and destruction, this week on Hidden Brain.
Hidden Brain, Saturday afternoon at 3 and then Sunday morning at 6 on 91.3 KUAF. This reminder, you can hear great classical music tonight at 8 on 91.3 KUAF every Thursday through Sunday night from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. Peter Vandegraaff has great classical music for you. And you can listen to great classical music any time of the day at KUAF2, our HD channel devoted to the music. It's available at KUAF.com, on your HD radio in your car or at home, or by asking your smart speaker to play KUAF2. Speaking of music, it's time for this week's Sound Perimeter with Leah.
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. Lullaby refers specifically to a song used to calm down children or put them to sleep. Lullabies are often short, repetitive, basic, and some of them a little sad. That sadness that in music we recognize as sublime. Who doesn't need a lullaby these days? Our opening excerpt, Johannes Brahms' Wiegen Lied, Opus 49, No. 4, is perhaps the most well-known lullaby of all times. Recently, I came across Gideon's Lullaby, a track from my friend Amos Cochrane's latest album, Niente. Amos Cochrane is an Emmy-nominated, locally-based composer, musician, and sound artist. He released Niente a few weeks ago, featuring Miranda Baker in the violin, Christian Serrano Torres in the cello, and himself in the piano. Gideon's Lullaby was originally conceived in 2017 as part of a musical score Cochrane wrote for a high school theater company play. During that time, one of the students participating in the play died. For this album, Amos took the melody from the play's original score, arranged it for piano, violin, and cello, and dedicated the piece to the student's memory by titling it Gideon's Lullaby. In Cochrane's words, "I believe it represents the idea that living is the most fragile thing, and the fine line between beauty and tragedy, happiness and sorrow, is what makes it such a journey. Always remembering to end to an optimistic note." Let's hold to that fine line, to the optimism, and listen to a passage of Gideon's Lullaby.
Thank you.
That was Miranda Baker, violin, Cristian Serrano Gomez, cello, and Amos Cochran, piano, performing Gideon's Lullaby from Cochran's latest album, Niente. One of my favorite tunes of all time is Chucho Valdez Versus a Jesse. Versus is French for lullaby. Chucho Valdez is a Cuban pianist, composer, band leader, and arranger. I grew up listening to his music and saw him in live concerts with his band, Iraquere, while I was still living in my native country, Colombia. When my kids were born in the early 2000s, I came across the album Cuban Lullaby, a compilation of songs and tunes that very much took me to my childhood and helped me connect my own kids with my own traditions. That's how I found Versus a Jesse, which I want to share with you today, its simplicity and beauty, and the sense of hope for calmness. Let's listen to Chucho Valdez Versus a Jesse from the early 2000s album Cuban Lullaby. That was Grammy winner Chucho Valdez, Cuban pianist, band leader, and composer, interpreting Versus a Jesse. This is Leah Uribe, associate professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter.
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, yes, we've lost some of our perennial warm weather activities this year. Summer musicals at ACO and Arkansas Public Theater, the Gully Park Concert Series in Fayetteville, and the Rodeo of the Ozarks in Springdale. But Becca Martin Brown, the features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, joins us tomorrow to give us more online options for local entertainment. And we'll find out how college study abroad programs are handling 2020. Hint, you can probably guess the answer. That and much more on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3. And once again, let me say thank you to you for supporting 91.3 KUAF, Ozarks at Large, and all of the great programs on our station. I can tell you we feel incredibly fortunate to have you with us each day and to have your support. From the pick and post with Mike Shirky to scratching the surface with Caitlin Ahrens to the people you don't hear that often on the air, like Rhonda Dillard, our underwriting director, we thank you. And we'll keep the great radio coming. That's a promise. Thanks for helping us reach our June goal of $35,000 more than a week before the end of the month. Stay well and keep listening.
This is 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. Every person born in the United States is a citizen of this country, even if their parents were not citizens of the United States. A person born into another country to parents who are citizens of the United States is also a citizen of this country. A legal permanent resident is someone who is not a citizen of the United States, but who is legally permitted to live here. Legal permanent residents enjoy most of the rights of citizens, and like citizens, they must obey the laws and pay their taxes. They have the same rights to due process as citizens. Legal permanent residents are not full members of the political community because there are some rights that are reserved for citizens. Only citizens may vote in national elections, hold public office, or serve on juries. In most cases, legal permanent residents can become citizens. An adult permanent resident may apply for citizenship after living in the United States legally for 5 years. That's all for today's podcast, 60 Second Civics, where civic education only takes a minute.
And the theme to 60 Second Civics is written and performed by Cheryl B. Englehart. You can find her online at cbemusic.com. The song we hear here is titled Complacent, which you can find on Apple Music along with all of Cheryl's music. The theme to Ozarks at Large, by the way, titled First Hurrah, it is written and performed by Daryl Sean. Daryl's most recent CD is titled Safe in Sound. You can learn more about Daryl at his Facebook and Instagram pages, as well as at darylsean.com. Timothy Dennis mastered our show this Thursday evening. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Montanay. Leah Uribe, thank you so much for this week's edition of Sound Perimeter. She'll be back next Thursday with another edition of that segment. And speaking of next Thursday, that's when Paul Gatling and the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report will return to Ozarks at Large. Took a week off, a well-deserved week off this week. The Community Spotlight is produced by Pete Hartman inside the Nancy Blair Operations Studio at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Once again, a big thank you to everyone who contributed to 91.3 KUAF during our June fiscal fundraiser. End of fiscal year fundraiser, I should say. We did reach our $35,000. We do appreciate it. If you didn't get a chance and would like to contribute in an amount that you choose, you can go to supportkuaf.com. We will be back with you tomorrow at noon with a Friday brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. Also tomorrow afternoon at about 1:30, we'll carry Governor Asa Hutchinson's next press briefing live. You'll be able to hear an updated version of our Friday noon show tomorrow night at 7. And don't want to wish your life away, but if you look forward to the weekend, we do have weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday mornings at 9. If you miss all of that, don't worry. We are available as a free podcast through all the major podcast distributors. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large and hear the most recent edition of our show. And if you go to ozarksatlarge.com, there you can find past editions of our program as well as individual stories and interviews. Also there are links associated with those interviews and stories so you can share something that you found especially interesting with friends or family through email or through social media. Finally, in the last few weeks, we've started the Ozarks at Large newsletter. You can sign up for that. It sends you brief synopsis of what is on the show each day and links so you can click through and listen that way. All right. That's it for Thursday. Please be well. I'm Kyle Kellens. We'll talk to you tomorrow.